Okay, here we go. We're discussing
2046.
Okay. 2046.
Presentar.
Rudy.
Jane.
I was going to say my name.
Richard.
And Mark.
Well, did anybody walk out?
No.
This time? Was it worth making the film this time?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm easy to please.
Question number one. What?
I guess I'm easy to please, though.
I thought it was interesting that we were seeing this film and seeing Broken Flowers for the same meeting, because it's like a pretty much a similar kind of person where that
that's what I said, and then everyone I thought,
but it was the wrong timing.
Yes, but
the timing was off.
That was your reason.
No, I totally agree with you. Yeah. However,
very different film.
Different characters, different tastes, different style.
Oh, yeah.
So they're definitely two different films, but it's the same problem with the guy. The guy just can't commit. This one definitely is much richer, much more real, much more it's much more of a history there. You see the relationships much more so, rather than revisiting them as he did in Broken Flowers. The one thing that threw me off though with this film is that at the beginning, when he's beginning to narrate, he was saying, you know, something about to the effect that, you know, in those days, I was seeing a whole bunch of women and just they didn't mean anything to me and I didn't mean anything to them. And so I thought that was going to change at some point in the film, that there would be a time when he did mean something to women, when women did mean something to him. But it never ended up being that way. No woman ever was, you know,
important.
Important to him. And
what about Su Mishan?
Which one
was she now?
The gambler?
The black widow.
The gambler.
Yeah, whose name was the black widow, the married woman that we never met. Did we ever see that married woman?
Unless she was really in person.
Yeah, I wondered that too. This is a really, you know, full of things that I think that never are fully answered or very completely clear. It's not to me.
But I would have asked, you know, what about the woman who had the Japanese fellow who loved her? It seemed like he was really
attracted to her because she wasn't available to him.
Right.
You know, and if she had been, I think it would have been another story.
But right. That's the excuse. She wasn't available, so I understood that he was or had fallen in love with her. But it was the wrong, he uses the wrong, it's never the right time, the right place. Never the same with the right person. So it just didn't work. But that was an excuse also, I think.
He narrates that at the end, something to the effect that, that you know, it's always the right person at the wrong time or the wrong person at the right time. But I think you're right that it's just an excuse for him not saying he doesn't want to be committed, or he doesn't want to commit to any one woman, because in the end he does get back with that woman, one woman who fell in love with him, the main one who he...
The one next door?
The one next door. And there is the possibility of... And he realizes that there is the possibility she will forgive his transgressions and his indiscretion and his non-commitments if he'll commit. And he realized that he has the possibility of committing. And there, in one of the flashbacks where there's a flashback of him in a taxi, or him in a taxi, you know, his flashback and his narration of the flashback says that, you know, this is one that I shouldn't let go, get away. And yet, later on in the film, he just lets her walk out of his life again, you know? It's like, will he ever learn? Or does he care to learn?
She says, can I just stay with me tonight? Can I borrow you just for tonight? And he says, I've always told you that there's one thing that I would never
lend.
Yeah.
And what is it?
himself.
His heart.
Like his real self. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I got so frustrated with him. I mean, not in a way, again, that I wanted to leave the movie, but I really just sort of, what? Look, she's right in front of you. You just said a minute ago that you realize you let love walk out of your life, essentially, and here it is again, and you're still going to do it. I can't believe it. And he did it, you know?
Well, I fell asleep at an inopportune time, and so I just was hopelessly lost in it. But maybe I wasn't, because I got everything
that we've gotten. Yeah.
And what is the futuristic stuff? You know, like with the subway going or the train going, and it's like you're going
the attendance.
2046 the year, 2046.
Well, that was his writing. He was writing those stories.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is a story on the side, though, a science fiction story on the side. Or maybe it was a serial story.
So I think he was writing all of those things, and he was trying to sort of deal with his real life situation in his interactions with the androids who, in response to his desires, which he would express to them, you know, please come with me or leave with me or whatever, that they would, you know, hold back and sort of be resistant. And so he sort of switched the roles.
Mm-hmm. I think at one point when he was talking about the android, the character in his story was talking about the android.
Mm-hmm.
The character in his story was saying, I don't know if it's because she doesn't love me or it's because she loves another, that she's so indifferent to me. And the android character was the same character that was the one who
had the Japanese
boyfriend. So it did mirror his love life.
Yeah.
And that is Fei Wang. Well, and she's...
Which one?
Chungking Express.
Yeah, she was in Chungking Express, yeah. And she's like a famous Hong Kong rock and roll star.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, she's really beautiful.
She's very beautiful. Well, they were all fairly beautiful.
Yeah.
She was particularly beautiful.
Yeah.
She's charming in Chungking Express.
Yeah.
Really. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the first film of Wong Kar-wai.
I think that Chungking Express is really worth seeing. I liked it a lot. These are the only two films of his that I've seen.
What else has he done that we...
Well, I think that this one is a part of a trilogy. In the Mood for Love.
Oh, that's right. I didn't see that one.
I didn't see that either. But Chungking Express is also about people's inability to be intimate with each other. And, you know, he starts out Chungking Express with people come 1.004 centimeters from each other, but do they ever really touch? They never can really touch.
This is Chungking Express.
But it's not the same kind of distance that Bill Murray has in Broken Flowers distance. It's a timidness.
Mm-hmm.
that many of the characters in Chungking Express have, rather than a reluctance, I think, or they don't know how to be intimate, rather than Bill Murray's aversion to intimacies. So I'm just saying that what you're saying is true, but I didn't want to, because we talked about Broken Flowers, I didn't want everybody to think that it's about that kind of distance.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Well, we have to say something about, I think, about visually the movie. I mean, I thought it was stunning. You know, it was just very incredibly, wonderfully done. Visually, color, the framing. I mean,
it's extreme left or extreme right.
Mm.
Extreme left or extreme right. Very few shots of the whole screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a wall or something here covering three quarters of the screen. I like that.
Yeah.
Very much.
It really worked. I, you know, when I've seen attempts at that in the past, that I think it rarely works. That here, it was just stunning. Yeah, that was really incredible.
There were a couple shots in there that was were almost identical to In the Mood for Love shots, and I can't remember In the Mood for Love. I saw it, and I only remember a couple shots in the rain. And I think that if this is a trilogy, then it would have helped us to see that film.
Mm-hmm. So that's the trilogy. Those. The Mood for Love and Chungking Express.
No, Chungking Express is not part of the trilogy.
Oh.
So the third hasn't been made yet.
I don't know. Maybe I'm making.
Oh, so In the Mood for Love, you think it's one kind of.
No, but I think you're right. I think I did hear that this was somehow related, that it's the same character,
uh-huh.
Or maybe it's the same type of character. But I can't remember the film well enough to say that for sure. So. It would surprise me that it's the same, exact same character, but it could be the same kind of flavor of a story of something.
It says here, nominally, it's a sequel to In the Mood for Love, in which the married Chow, the main character, had an unconsummated affair with Maggie Cheung, who makes a cameo appearance here. That's all it says about it being a trilogy. It's like a sequel.
Uh-huh.
Nominally. Who's Maggie Cheung? Which one was she? Anybody know?
Cameo, maybe the one that he called Lulu. She was there a short time. I didn't see that film, so I don't know.
Uh-huh. I didn't.
But she's there a very short time. And then
the
comes
gambling?
Back. No. No. The one he calls Lulu that doesn't remember
years
back.
Yeah.
And he explains to her, and she somebody kills her or something.
Oh, yeah, there's. This happens quite early in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But didn't she come back later, though?
She came back later in another scene. I don't know why.
Maybe,
that confused me.
The sequence is so confusing. Yeah.
That really
sometimes something would happen that preceded everything else we've seen. I mean, it went back and forth in time a number of times.
1969, 1968.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And then there was 2046.
Where were they? In Hong Kong, right?
Yeah.
Well, they're
celebrating
Christmas.
Celebrating Christmas every year.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Which I thought, okay.
I didn't know.
What do I know?
Exactly.
Christmas is getting big in Asia. It's sort of like for them an exotic holiday.
Since
I was there in Vietnam when Christmas, all of a sudden you saw these Santa Clauses and I
got,
yes, you know, and reindeer. It was so bizarre.
In the heat.
Yeah.
But I think Christmas in Hong Kong isn't that too far out of the
realm. No, because it's a lot of Western. It's a very Westernized city.
It was a British colony for a long time.
Yeah, right. Maybe that's where it started. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, I wish we could be more clever about
what was the role of the guy, I can't remember his name, the guy that was kind of a shadow of Chow that took messages, brought messages to the girl. And
you mean that funny looking guy?
Yeah, he hung around with him all the time. Who was he there? Just a friend?
I thought he was a business partner of some kind.
A business partner?
Wasn't he the manager of the hotel where there were rooms 2046 and 2047?
No, you mean the father of the girl?
No, that was the father, no.
Now, the guy who was always at the desk.
What part did you go to sleep?
Actually, there were two funny looking guys, but one was funnier looking than the other.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, really funny looking guy. I didn't know what his role was exactly either.
You mean he was the guy who was trying to get him to fix him up with the girl next door?
Yes.
Yes. And who brings the watch as a present?
I thought that was like his editor at the paper.
Oh.
I'm almost positive that's what that relationship was.
I saw that part.
I thought it got a little long when a new woman appeared after three or four women, or I don't remember how many women there were, but after the long relationship with the girl who fell in love with him that we see happening next door, which he pays 10 units of money, whatever they were.
Hong Kong dollars.
That's gone, and then another, and then another. I thought it was one too many. I felt that way. I don't know, and you probably missed that part.
But I think that's the point, that he had so many women in it.
Again, like
that it just can't keep track of who's who, and he probably didn't keep track of who's who.
Except there's three important women. I mean, there was the one who fell in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
There's the daughter of the owner of or manager of the hotel,
and the,
who runs
the
Japanese
and the
boyfriend.
One with the black glove.
And then there's the black widow woman. I think that's all I remember.
You see him with other women.
Yes, of course. There, but the others are sort of secondary.
Right, yeah.
I don't know.
The android.
But the android, yeah, was in the science fiction story.
But that was him with her, wasn't it? Or was it? No?
No, it was the Japanese boy.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah, his alter ego. I just assumed that was his alter ego.
He said it.
Oh, he did?
It. Yes.
You know, and that was him. I just assumed.
He had to become the Japanese to approach.
Oh, right.
Because he had a Japanese boyfriend.
Well, there had to be more to it. But when I just saw it this afternoon.
Oh, did you?
If you can call it seeing it. And so one of my students was the cashier, and so he said, "Oh, what movie are you seeing?" And then when I came out, he said, "Oh, what did you think of it?" And so I had to say that I fell asleep and that I became hopelessly confused. And he said, "That's what a lot of people said coming out of it.
That they fell asleep in you, or that they were hopelessly confused?"
Both separately and together.
This movie has the flavor of an adaptation of a book that you don't quite get unless you've read the book.
I think that, Chungking Express, when I started looking for reviews, I found a review that analyzed it in terms of that it actually was about Hong Kong and the giving over of Hong Kong from the British to the Chinese. And I get the feeling that this is an allegory too. That there's some meaning more to it than we're capable of knowing, not knowing much about the history of Singapore. You know, why does it take place in Singapore instead of Hong Kong?
I thought it took place in Hong Kong.
No. I thought so too. I thought he initially starts out in Hong Kong. With the gambler, and then he moves. He starts off in Singapore.
It's
he moves from Singapore to Hong Kong.
It's set in 1960s Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. It says here.
Oh.
But there's a lot of reference to Singapore.
Singapore a lot.
And they're going to Singapore. He spent time in Singapore, right?
I think that's where he. There was one time when a whole bunch of guys from his office went to Singapore for a party. He was there at one time with the gambler lady. And the girlfriend who fell in love with him, or the girl fell in love with him, she was going to Singapore.
She's going to go.
Her
right.
job. So I'm sure there's,
they went
there's
to
a lot
house.
Of, there probably was a lot of exchange of people moving back and forth between Hong Kong and Singapore. It was, like people in New York and San Francisco. There's a lot of New Yorkers here. San Francisco's in New York. They're like sister cities.
Yeah, but I think that politically, there were some small references to politics. 1969,
uh-huh.
That's when the riots,
riots.
Were. And so that's what made me think that maybe there was a political meaning underlying it. But I don't know. We need some reviews.
Here's Hong Kong. Anyone know where anything is? Singapore? Where's Singapore?
South.
Quite a ways out.
Southwest.
Southwest, yes.
Haiphong.
Much south.
Hanoi.
On the peninsula or on the isthmus.
Yeah, and there were references to Vietnam. And
here's the peninsula.
Phnom Penh, Cambodia.
Cambodia,
yes.
That's right.
Chongshan, yes. Oops.
So yeah, there's a lot there that other people would understand who have knowledge of the history.
Here's Shanghai. Does anyone talk about Shanghai? No. Singapore.
I think Shanghai.
Is Singapore in China?
No. Singapore is a country.
It's a big island.
It's a city state.
Open this.
Hong Kong.
Is it an island?
No, I think it's a peninsula.
It's an island, but it's called Hainan. This is an old atlas, by the way.
But that hasn't changed. The names of those places.
And where's Macau?
Macau is part of Hong Kong.
Oh, it is?
You take a boat from Hong Kong to
Macau. There it is, Macau, right here. Okay. All right. I think it would be down here. Oh, look here.
Singapore is down there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Over there.
Hong Kong.
Maybe it's on the other page.
Yeah, but that's Malaysia.
But it may be on the Malay Peninsula.
Oh, you're kidding. Singapore, you're right. It's at the bottom of Malaya.
Mm-hmm.
Malaysia. Near Borneo. For goodness sakes. And see, Hong Kong is up here. That's Vladivostok. Stuff. What? This is Sumatra. Probably called something else now.
Yeah, what is Sumatra now?
And here's Vietnam and Thailand. Okay, so Singapore is really far away. Hong Kong and Macau are very close together. Okay.
Well, we need reviews.
Yeah, is there anything in that movie magazine about it?
About what?
This movie, 2046.
I mean, there's not enough people here. We don't have enough to say about it. We have to read somebody else's review.
I guess so. Apparently.
Well, I mean, I decided that I was just going to sit quietly and listen to other people talk.
But you had questions.
Yeah.
What was it about?
Yeah. Like,
What happened?
What happened? And who was who?
Would be nice to know all those historical things and why the allusions to all those, to those countries, but the story is still the central story is still like the love of love, right?
Yeah. And isolation, anomie.
I think, you know, probably if you knew the history of Hong Kong or Singapore, who had been there or had been there at that those times, you would get more from it. But I think the story is universal and transcends a time and a place. So anyway, the blurb here, you want to read the blurb? I don't have my glasses. You guys, glasses.
Chow, Tony Leung Chu,
main character.
Why? Spies on hotel room 2046 and starts writing an imaginary erotic novel about the people who come and go. The futuristic world in his book, A Place Called 2046, where nothing ever changes and no one ever leaves, starts to collide with the present. Then a mysterious traveler, Takuya Kimura, manages to be the first person to return from 2046. Written and directed by blah, blah, blah. That's it.
That wasn't the movie that I saw.
Well, that explains a lot. I mean, I think, don't you think that's accurate?
No.
Collides with the present.
I don't remember a character coming back from 24. Although I remember the narration saying something.
I'm the only one who came back.
Yeah, something about that, but That wasn't a real important part of the movie, except for the fact that the narrator could narrate the story at that point, since he was the only one who
came back. Just look at that. Everybody wants to go to 2046.
Because nothing changes.
Because nothing changes, and then you don't come back. It's sort of like if you're pulled and seduced into going there, you're trapped. Well, he certainly was trapped in something. He couldn't seem to get out of his stuck place, right, where he can't go. He can only go so far in a relationship and no further.
Well, the woman who lived in 2046 is the woman he rejected who loved him.
Right.
So he did come back from 2046.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Go there again, please. Wherever it was you were.
Got a point.
Say it again.
So he was in 2047, or yeah, I don't know if that's
next relevant. Door.
The room.
But, right, but in 2046 lived the woman who wanted him. Mm-hmm. And he would always come back from 2046. He would always leave 2046. He would not stay the night.
Well, then maybe 2046 isn't being stuck. It's, you know, a bonded relationship. You know, it's
that it's everybody wants that love of their lives, and he's the only one who's had that and come back from that and rejected that,
which is certainly not true. But that many have done that, but
that wasn't the love of his life. He didn't love her. She loved
him. No. What I'm saying is that every the ideal is that you meet the love of your life and live happily ever after. Don't come back from that. And he never did that. He never, well, maybe he went there, but he didn't come back.
He went right to the border of it, but then pulled back from it.
Presumably she could have done that for him, and then his life would have been the same.
But he didn't want that with her.
That's right, yeah. So he
came back.
Well, to him, maybe really being in love or, you know, being committed felt like a trap, you know, felt like he'd be stuck there forever.
Here goes. A room number. This is a longer thing.
Oh.
A room number, a year, a long anticipated sequel to Wong Kar Wai's prize winning In the Mood for Love. 2046 is all these things, though one might also venture that it's also about writing and imagination, obsession and memory. History writ small and large, space and time travel, as well as inter-Asian immigration and cross-cultural crevices that seem unbridgeable. Got it?
It pretty much covers the long ground.
Yeah.
With the loss of his true love.
Which
who was his true love? Okay.
I love.
The Sui Li Shen, the married woman. That
had to be.
That we never.
That he mentions.
Yeah.
With the same name.
The same one.
With the loss of his true love. Moods Chow Mo Wan, Tony Leung, has morphed into a cynical, lonely Casanova, fixed on the unattainable past, as symbolized by the next-door apartment, 2046. A one-time journalist reduced to grinding out lurid potboilers, he tries to unravel his twisted psyche in the sci-fi porn he writes. Stories set in the year of, again, 2046, while making his way romantically through his landlord's daughters.
There were two.
That's not really accurate, is it?
No.
So the young girl came and...
Well, I think maybe this reviewer got mixed up with the women.
He was confused like everyone.
Right.
Go ahead.
Not on first thing.
Wang Jing Wen, Fei Wong, and Bei Ling, Zizi Zhang. Okay, the daughters. The former is forbidden to see her Japanese suitor by her Chinese father, the latter hopelessly smitten with the word-slinging rogue himself.
They were both... Huh? She was the daughter of the...
Yeah, the younger daughter was smitten with him, was she not? And he...
The one with the Japanese boyfriend?
No. The other one.
What was this? Was she flirting with him or something like that?
The young girl?
That?
She came to get drinks or something.
I think she was just flirting with him or something. Mm-hmm.
Can Chow make it out of this mirrored hall or hell of romantic obsession, the Hotel California. Like Oriental Hotel, he checked into but can never leave physically. These scenes on the balcony, I like these scenes that were very strange.
Yeah,
on the roof or something. Like the beautiful dream or utterly futile nightmare that Chow is hard pressed to relinquish, 2046 is less about specifics than it is about style, less about the love objects than a feeling. Sink into the narcotic bliss of the visuals, which rove into brighter and brasher, darker and more monochromatic zones than those in mood, the glittery Bei Ling and cat's eye makeup, beehive and sequined. Is that the girl that falls in love with him?
Yeah, Bei Ling? I think so.
And sequined, I can't read this word. Chung's son?
Oh, Chung-Sion, that's the collared dress that they wear there.
Juxtaposed with the dilapidated doorways that frame her. A 21st century traveler peeps at a beloved android servicing a customer and loses a single tear, which refracts in a stabbing acid test splatter. A writer smoking and scribbling in sepia tones while his script darts across the screen. One of the closest things to a silent film thus far into the century, 2046 achieves the quantum feat of flashing back and jettisoning forward at the same time. Did you learn something?
That was a generous review there. But I agree with everything that was said, but I didn't think it was as wonderful as that scene.
Well, it's not. Right. It's not really a review. It's just a
Critics' Choice.
Yeah.
By Kimberly Chan, senior editor, Arts and Entertainment for the San Francisco Bay Guardian.
Oh well.
It's some sort of review.
I was thinking that if it's true that he was obsessed with this woman who was married, who he couldn't have, and that poisoned him for the rest of his other affairs, because no one could measure up to her, or he could never be in love with another woman as much as he was in love with her, then I could buy everything else. But I didn't see any of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't see his longing for that. When was it that it was?
He mentions her.
At the beginning, he does.
He just says, when this new, whatever her name is, Sun Li Shen comes in, and he says, you have the same name as this woman I was in love with, who's right. married.
And then he kisses her face off. He practically sucks her face into
his mouth. That when that happens.
Maybe that's what In the Mood for Love was about, and that's why I can't.
Oh.
I can't. Maybe if we saw that movie, we'd buy this movie.
It does say, in which the married Chow had an unconsummated affair with Maggie Chung, who makes a cameo appearance here. I don't know which cameo she was. But the way he talks about it is the woman who was married, not him. Anyway.
Yeah, right. Well, and I stayed till the end to specifically to see the cast and who played who, and they didn't have it.
No, they just had the, when it was a Chinese person, they didn't put it in English.
No, they didn't. Well, I don't even think it listed the cast.
I thought it did. Well,
it listed the cast. Oh, yeah, that's what the
characters will find it online.
Went by, yeah. And some of them said film director or whatever, but I don't know.
Yeah, right, I saw that.
Interesting that they used a lot of songs in Spanish.
You did?
About three.
Yeah, the soundtrack was great.
It was.
There was, end, I was waiting to see if I recognized him. There was a group called Secret Garden. Anybody heard of them?
Mm-hmm. No. Did anybody catch who sang Gasta Viva?
No.
I couldn't.
But the other great aria that was in there from another opera, which I can't remember which opera, was Maria Callas.
Yes. I recognized her voice, but I didn't recognize the opera. That was Maria Callas. Mm. And I think it was Joan Sutherland singing.
Could be.
And it is a soundtrack that they've released.
Yeah.
I was thinking of looking for
it. Yeah, but it's so different. You're right, it's so different culturally from the rest of the film.
What, the music?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. The opera is one thing, but then the Cuban song and the Mexican song, well, where they came from doesn't matter. They're in Spanish
lyrics,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that's to give you an idea that it is timeless, or, you know, like a universal story.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Universal. It was shot in a lot of different places. It was shot in Singapore and Macau and Hong Kong.
Which is funny because you'd hardly see anything except interiors. Why did they bother to go to I couldn't figure that out. I remember that now.
And Broken Flowers, I was waiting to see all the places where the film had been shot. And it was only in New York State.
What was it?
Because he took all these airplanes.
It's not clear.
Like he was traveling all over the country.
Well, he may have.
And I didn't see any place else in the thing there. I didn't see any place else.
I think it's quite possible you could shoot within a 50-mile radius in New York.
Well, I know, but I mean, the story was telling you that he flew away.
And in the story, he did. But all that meant is that they shot it all.
Yeah.
Locally.
I wanted to see other places.
Oh, you did.
I like it when the story is more specific, when the setting is more specific.
Mm. When you can really see that it is whatever it is.
Yeah, and it adds something to the character, I think, too. When the setting is specific, because the country is so huge
and diverse.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And culturally, something that takes place in California is very different than. Mm-hmm. Upstate New York.
Where was that couple, the real estate couple? Where were they? Could have been
anywhere. Some subdivision, new subdivision or something, really.
Well, okay. I think we're done.
Movie.